Det her er Rick Astley på Pop FM.
Hello, Rick, and welcome on the link on the air.
Mange tak.
You're welcome. Du er velkommen. Rick, how have you kept yourself in a good mood and sane during the long COVID lockdown?
Wow. I can probably say I've not always been in a good mood, and I've certainly not always been sane through the lockdown. I think that goes for everybody, doesn't it? I'm no different. I'm really lucky in the sense that we don't live in the centre of London. We live in the suburbs, so we've got a nice garden. I've got a studio at home. So I've been messing around with music a lot. I've been doing quite a few things on different Zoom things, you know, some different events and different charity things. And I guess just keeping busy like most people. I think the strangest thing for me and all the girls and the guys that I work with is that we are like a little circus. We're our own little circus, and we go off and do gigs and we hang out together and we have lunches and dinners and breakfasts and hang out and do that and maybe even drink a glass of wine. Mm. That's been the strangest thing, is that if you work with people in an office or in a certain place every day, you could still meet up for a walk or do whatever, a coffee. Most of my band and crew live all over Britain. They don't live in London. Do you know what I mean? They live all over the place. So that's been really strange, I think, is trying to keep some kind of connection with the people that you work with every day. You know what I mean? It's kind of weird. So
it is. Yeah. Greatest Hits World Tour was scheduled before COVID. What made you decide that this was the right time to celebrate and embrace your legacy of the Greatest Hits?
Somebody told me to do it. That's the truth of it. what happened was, when I turned 50 a few years ago now, 5 years ago, I made a record for the first time in ages. I hadn't made new music for a long time. And in the UK, it went crazy. We had a number one album. We went platinum. You know, we sold a lot of actual physical CDs. Do you remember them, everybody? I don't know, that was a real turning point. And we didn't really manage to do that anywhere else in the rest of the world, to be honest. We did it in the UK because, you know, I'm here, I'm from here, and we just got a connection going there. And but obviously, because of the internet, fans who are genuine fans, that they know what you're doing anyway, and they can find you on, you know, any social media platform and all the rest of it. So I do still play new songs when we play live, because I know that people in the audience know the songs because they're genuine fans, you know. But I think in terms of like doing a hits thing, we hadn't done that for a long time. Every artist puts a hits out every year, it seems now. But we hadn't done it for a long time. And we certainly hadn't had like a collection of songs, let's call it, where there was some new ones there as well as the old ones. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So it was quite a nice thing to sort of bookend that and kind of have some new songs on there. And so like I say, when I play live now, I play all the old hits, of course I do, because I'd get thrown off the stage if I didn't, and that's fine. You know, I think that's part of the deal as an artist. You have to represent the music that you've made. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But also we play new songs, and I think that's, for me, that's really exciting because it keeps me awake, you know, and it keeps the band awake. Because if you've played a song for 30 years or you've known that song for 33 years, you can sort of rest on it almost. You can sort of say, oh, we've got that, it's fine, we'll play that, they'll enjoy it, it's all great. It gets too comfortable, if you know what I mean. Mm. You need to have that element of fear when the first chords of a song start at a concert and think, who knows this song? Who cares about this song? Mm. Does people just want us to get on with Never Gonna Give You Up? They don't really. And so there's a sense that you think, I've got to win this audience over. I've got to win their kind of affection, if you know what I mean, in terms of like what they feel about that song or me. And that feels good, you know? Yeah.
You made beautiful life when you turned 50. That's beautiful.
And well, there you go.
And you recorded it in a back to basics way, playing the instruments yourself. In which way was that a joy for you?
Well, I've always played a bit anyway, and I started in bands as a drummer when I was a kid, and I've always kind of loved the idea of playing instruments of any kind anyway, because I just like it. I do it while I'm watching TV, to be honest. I'll very often sit with a guitar on my knee. My wife Lena complains sometimes, but because, you know, I'm watching even football or something, and I've still got a guitar on my knee, just, you know. And I'm not a real musician, because I work with real musicians, and I've known real musicians all my life. I don't put myself in that category, but if I'm left in my own little studio and I turn the lights down, I can make a record and I can make things sound okay. And I kind of feel that there's a real joy in that, because when I was young, obviously, never going to give you up. I didn't even write it. I didn't play a note of it. And I'm okay with that, because it's like, it's part of my DNA. It's part of who I am. It's a massive part of my life. And I have a connection to that song like no other, because it started everything. But I also feel that it's just, as a human being, it's nice to have actually made something with my hands and made that into a record. So I've really enjoyed that process. And like I say, having a little studio at home is not that, you know, it's not that crazy anymore. I mean, people obviously have a laptop in their back bedroom and can make a record. Do you know what I mean? It's not like it was. But I also think I really appreciate when I hear a record that's been made by a great producer with great artists and great musicians and all playing together sometimes or what have you, and, you know, and using strings and all kinds of stuff that obviously I would have no chance of doing that, because I'm kind of doing it in the dark, like I say.
Yeah.
But there's a real love of doing something that you've done yourself. It's a bit like, get this, through lockdown, I've built a shed. And in the back garden. And believe me, it's not an ordinary shed. It's like you could live in this thing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's got a proper slate tiled roof. It's got everything, right? And it's probably not as good as one that I could have bought, but I built it and I feel really good about that. You know what I mean? And that's the same thing with music sometimes. You have to get your hands dirty, you know?
When was the last time you were at a football stadium?
Do you mean to actually watch the football?
Yeah.
It's a few years ago, yeah. I think. I mean, to watch a game, it was probably going to see Manchester United, I think. I'm a Man United fan.
Yeah.
So we're pretty excited right now with everything that's been going on,
of
with
course.
Ronaldo coming back and all that, you know. So it's super exciting for us. But that was probably one of the last games I saw. I don't go to football a lot, to be honest. I really love it. But I tend to, if I'm going up to Manchester or I'm going to be in that area, we've got some friends there and sometimes, you know, we can get invited to a nice cosy seat, which is nice. And I like watching the games, but I've got so used to watching sport with like 25 different cameras and every angle and every replay and every everything, it's sometimes difficult when you go to the game, you're looking around going, I need to see that again. And it's really it's crazy. But obviously the atmosphere, you can't substitute the atmosphere. No. So,
but you can bring your guitar to the stadium. So it's better maybe sit
in your
couch.
No, you can't. That's true. Never gonna give you up, never gonna let you down.
I saw a headliner in the Danish media where you said, some people thought I was dead. What gave you that idea?
Well, obviously a lot of things have happened on the internet with the song Never Gonna Give You Up and just me in general, like different memes and different people doing stuff. Mm. And quite some years ago now, there was a thing which is really cruel and horrible, I think, where they were just, somebody just announced in a certain way that somebody had died, and it might be a big, well-known actor, could be a sports person, could be a singer, and they said that about me at one point. And I have no problem with people making fun of that video and me and whatever else. I really don't. I'm cool with it. I can see the fun in that. Mm. I just think it's not very cool to say, you know, someone's died, because I kind of feel that, like, obviously my mum's still around and that's not great for her to see in the news or whatever. You know what I mean? Even if it's just a joke kind of thing, it's just not something you want to see about your son or, you know, and our daughter, obviously, and stuff. So I think that kind of left a bit of a mental thing with me somewhere. But I also relate to the fact that when someone hasn't heard about somebody for such a long time, as when, you know, sometimes with an artist like myself, people know one or two songs and then they kind of just forget about it. And obviously they forget about it. So they're kind of almost surprised that you're still alive in a way. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I don't know. That was a bit of a weird one, I think.
You are alive and well, and that's really,
I am indeed.
Really nice to hear. I heard a story a long time ago with a cab driver asking, are you Rick Astley? And then you have answered, I used to be. Do you know that?
Yeah, that's something I say quite a lot, yeah. I do say that quite a lot.
Why?
Yeah. Well, because I think, maybe not so much right now, because as I say, we've been doing concerts a lot and around, you know, different parts of the world. And obviously we've had some success with new music in the UK and stuff. I think there was just a point in my life where I just kind of felt, I'm not really that guy anymore. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That was a guy I used to be 25 years, 30 years ago, whenever this cab driver said this, you know.
Yeah.
I think it's hard to explain that, I think, but it's not like I'm a different person, because I'm still me, obviously I am, you know, but it's such a long time ago, and I think if anybody listening to this thinks about what they were doing 30-odd years ago, they're a different person as well. It's just that I think when you've made videos and you've made songs, they get frozen in time in people's minds. You know, somebody who is my age or around my age, they kind of see me as that person, that 21-year-old. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And therefore, that you are frozen in time a little bit. And also, if I'm going to be really honest about it, I actually think the people like me who made those records, we get a bit frozen in time. We kind of live in our 20s a lot of the time. I think everybody lives as if they're a bit younger than they really are. But I think it's one of the things that if I've got any possibility of staying young at all in my mind, it's the fact that I hang on to certain memories like we all do, you know? Mm-hmm. And I kind of think that some of my memories were so big, took over my whole life, as it were, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah, so sometimes, some years ago especially, I would just think of myself and say, well, I'm not really Rick Astley anymore. That was that other dude. But I do feel a bit more like Rick Astley these days than I did maybe 6, 7, 10 years ago. Yeah. You know what I mean? So it's a weird one. I almost wish that I'd given myself a stage name. You know, like people, yeah, you know, invent a name for themselves and then they can walk up to the stage, put that jacket on, mm-hmm, walk out and be
and leave
whoever that person is, yeah, and then go home.
Yeah.
And I've kind of just gone home I don't know. It's a weird one, that, I think. And it's also a bit weird. To be honest, that's one of the things that I don't mind doing interviews. I truly don't, because I don't do 25 of them a day anymore. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
This is the only interview I'm doing today, and that's great. Do you know what I mean? And so therefore, it's a conversation.
Yes.
But when you do interviews, like some of the big young artists today are probably doing 20 a day every day.
Yeah.
You eventually start thinking, who is this person I'm talking about? Mm. Do you know what I mean? It's almost like you're having a conversation about somebody else. So I really like being me, and I like being who I am, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, anyway.
At that time, I was also very young and unexperienced on the radio. I was 17 at that moment when you had your first hit single. When you think back of those decades of your life being Rick Astley, what do you remember from that time of your life?
Well, they do say if you can remember it, you weren't having a good enough time. But I think one of the main things was how amazing it was to go from a small town in the north of England to literally going almost, you know, almost everywhere around the world, really, and seeing the world through very different eyes than most people see it when they go on holiday or they go even for a business trip or what have you.
Yeah.
It was really kind of, it was quite a shock, if I'm honest, to arrive in a country where you'd already had 3 hit singles and you'd walk through the hotel reception and most people would know who you were. That was a weird, really weird, strange thing to kind of deal with. And on the one hand, that's really exciting because, hey, you're famous. But it's also weird to go to a country sometimes and you can't really experience it just like a human being. Do you know what I mean? You're experiencing it like
a product.
Yeah, kind of. And like, I don't know, really. You're just too conscious of yourself. And maybe if I was older, you know, I had my first hit when I was 21. And maybe if it happened when I was 28... I would have been more of a rounded human being and I could have dealt with it better. But I just kind of feel that, yeah, it was a bit strange, if I'm honest. And I kind of felt I was always trying to catch up with my own career, if you know what I mean. I was always behind it a little bit, I think, in terms of trying to experience what was really going on. And that was, to be honest, one of my favourite things, in a way, was when I went to America. Nobody knew I was and nobody cared. And I'd had like hits already in Europe and Japan and different parts of the world. And going there was kind of nice because it was like, okay, you've got to start again. You've just got to, you know, go and sing that song or another song or whatever and just see what happens. And I think that was kind of nice, really, because I think, you know, we're talking about before we had the internet, obviously. So if you wanted to have a hit record, you had to go to that country and you had to go and sing on TV and radio and go and play live and do all of that. Yeah. There was no substitute for it. You just had to go and do it.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, having a couple of, you know, proper hits in America and stuff and doing well there was kind of an amazing thing also, because a lot of my favourite artists were from America. And it was all, I've said this before, it was always an amazing feeling to think that Luther Vandross, people like Al Green even, and Bill Withers, must have heard my voice. They might not have liked it, but I know they must have heard it because we had a couple of big hits there. So they must have, you know, perhaps been driving down Sunset, you know, one day and heard my song. And that's that felt amazing to me. That felt like really amazing, you know what I mean? So, but I think, like I say, my thing happened so quickly from the release of that first song. Yes, I'd been in bands and yes, I've been in recording studios and I'd done lots of things like that. But actually having a hit from the moment we released that first song, I never really stopped for probably 2 or 3 years, really. I think, if I'm really honest, it would have been nice if it was a slow, gradual build-up. And it wasn't. It was just like an explosion.
Yeah.
And I'm lucky, and I know I'm lucky, yeah. But like I say, I was 21, and I was from a small town. I wasn't like a hip London kid. I was from a small town in the north, and I think it would have been a lot better to just gradually get into it. So I've got great memories, but I also feel I wasn't in the centre of it, really, really taking it all in, if you know what I mean. It was like I was on the other side of a piece of glass sometimes, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah. Do you feel comfortable today being out in public? You're pretty easy to recognise.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I don't even give that a second thought.
No.
I think it's different when you're a young, hot thing, then I think it's slightly different. But I think when you get to my age, anybody who recognises me just kind of gives me a wave or says, hey, you're that dude or whatever, or, you know, can I have a selfie or whatever it is. And that's fine. It doesn't happen every day. So it's really weird. I think it's to do with my hair. I think if my hair is kind of like in the right sort of shape, then people recognize me. And if it's not, they kind of don't, you know. And also, I've never been, you know, I've never really been one of those kind of singers who people either absolutely go nuts about or absolutely hate. I think I'm sort of in the middle ground. Of course, some people must hate me and some people must love me, but I'm saying I'm in the middle ground a little bit, if you know what I mean. I don't think it's like,
no.
I don't know, I might be very wrong there, but I think, you know, it's in the middle ground of like, I don't really care or I quite like him. I think I'm in that sort of ground, do you know what I mean?
You're a very likable guy, especially here in Denmark, and you have an obvious connection to Denmark because of your wife, Lene.
Yeah.
I read that you often go to Copenhagen in a car. Why?
Yeah, I pretty much always drive to Copenhagen, yeah. There's a few reasons. I don't like flying, obviously, that's the main reason.
Yeah.
But also, we've got a lot of Danish friends who live in London, and I tend to be the removal man for people who want to bring something from Denmark to England or England to whatever. And sometimes that's a bag of clothes, sometimes it's a chair, sometimes it's you know, some old photographs, sometimes God knows what it is.
Yeah.
But also, you know, our daughter lives in Denmark. She's been in Copenhagen now for 10 years, so it's nice to sort of come over. I mean, we can't always do that, but I've certainly had times where I've come over and I'm not just there for 2 or 3 days to do a concert. I'm there because we've got family and friends there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's kind of nice to have your own car and just potter around, you know. So I do fly, and I'm flying to America next week, and I fly to different places, obviously. But again, I think sometimes, like we were in Australia and New Zealand just before COVID happened, and I do all the drives in Australia. I'd rather fly there and then do some long drives. But you also actually get to see Australia. You get to see the country. You get to realise how big the distance is. You get to eat strange things that you know. And I've spoken to Australians and said things like, oh, my God, have you done this? And they'll go, no. And I'm like, how can you not have done that? And they're like, well, we don't drive from Sydney to Melbourne. We just don't do that. And I'm like, well, you should do one day. You know what I mean? Because I actually didn't drive it because they wouldn't let me. But I've driven from Sao Paulo to Rio as well.
Wow.
So I was in a car to do that. And not many people have done that because I guess they don't do it, you know what I mean? And it's like, but when you do it, you see a little bit of Brazil that you're never going to see. You're never going to see that on a plane, you know? And it's just interesting, I think.
What do you like to do when you're here, your second home in Denmark?
I have to have a pulser.
Yeah.
I've got to have that pretty much day one, usually. I sometimes do it on my own because no one's like... Listen, I think all Danes like a pulser, you know what I mean? That's for sure. But I think sometimes when you actually say, come on, let's go and have one now. And they're like, yeah, we'll get one later. And I'm like, you know, anyway, so I do that on my own sometimes. I always like to go up. Don't ask me. Well, I know exactly why. I like to go to Bellevue Beach, this fan up there.
Yeah.
Because I used to take Amelia, our daughter. Sometimes I'd go up there, just Amelia and I, and we'd just go to the beach when she was a tiny kid, you know, and we'd just sit on the beach for a morning. Because obviously when we're in Denmark, we're there to see friends and family, like I say. And sometimes it's like you do breakfast, brunch, lunch, afternoon tea, dinner, drinks, and it gets crazy, you know. So sometimes it was nice to just take Amelia and just go to the beach. So I quite like to go and have a walk up there. I guess it's just normal stuff, you know. I do go to museums, obviously, in Denmark sometimes, but it's kind of, I don't know, it's just like hanging out with friends. That's why we're there, and family,
sure,
you know. So
sure.
I don't really, I've been there so many times, And I've even been there, not for a long time now, but when, I'd say maybe some years ago, I would sometimes go to Denmark and Lena would go home and I'd just stay for 2 weeks. And I'd hang out with friends and we'd just do stuff and, you know, maybe borrow a studio sometimes as well and make some daft songs or do whatever and, you know, and just hang out with friends. And it's always, it's actually, like you say, it has definitely been a second home for me.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Again, I think even doing concerts in Denmark is very, very different because I understand certain, I don't speak Danish, but I understand a lot of Danish and I can say sentences to people and I understand some of the kind of like, I don't know, the connection of why Danish people are the way they are. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I understand Jandelor, I understand proper hygge, and you know, so I don't know really. It does feel very close to me, and
yeah, sure.
And also when we, you know, it's just different. It's not like going to France or Germany or Italy. It's just a very different thing, you know. Take me to your heart.
Married to a Dane. More than half of the married people leave each other these days. It's sad. You and Lena have been together for more than 30 years. If you should give one advice, what would that be?
Respect.
Yeah.
I think you have to respect the person you're with. You can love them, you can like them, but if you don't respect them, I don't think you can live with them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think a lot of people love the person they're with. They just don't respect them, and that is the. That's the end of it, I think.
Yeah.
If you haven't got that, you're done. And, you know, we've had our ups and downs, of course. Yeah, we've been together for over 30 years, so, you know, we've had our struggles and we've had our moments, but I still respect her, whatever happens, and I hope and I think that she does that with me as well, and I think that's the kind of strongest thing, really, because love is a really weird and very difficult thing to try and explain and understand, really, you know, whereas respect, I think, is a bit more, it's just on the table and that's it, you know, so I think that is the biggest thing.
Yeah. Have you been to the arena hosting the show, Royal Arena?
Yeah, yeah, of course I have. Yeah, yeah. I went to see you too there, actually.
Whoa.
Yeah. I mean, that was an amazing gig. Please don't anybody expect us to do anything that you two did if you went to that gig. Because that was, I mean, that gig was amazing, actually. And it's a great room, that, as well. I mean, it's a real, I mean, I would say that because I'm talking to you right now. But it actually, I think arenas over the years, there's been so many arenas built in the last 25 years in every major city around the world, and they keep getting better and better. I think when you went to some of the old ones that were built in the 80s or the what, you know what I mean? They weren't great for music. Do you know what I mean? They weren't great for putting a gig on.
This is built for
concerts. And they're
getting
better and better and better. Yeah, it's massive as well. It's huge, you know, and so if they got that wrong, they'd really get it wrong. And I think they got it right. You know what I mean? So it's a privilege to play in a place that big. There's no way we're going to fill it like you two did, but that's okay. We'll get some people in there and we'll have some fun. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to it. It's kind of nice, as I say, always to play in Denmark anyway, because it, like we said, it's like my second home to a great degree. And I know we'll have friends and family there and stuff, and we're probably going to have a drink as well afterwards, you know? That may happen.
And maybe visit a Pølsevogn if we can find one. That's a little bit hard.
Oh, don't you worry. I'll be doing that. I'll be taking the band and the crew to one of those. Yeah.
23rd October in Royal Arena. It's a Saturday night, Rick. We're going to have a party. It's going to be so great.
Yeah, it's crazy. We're so lucky to get a Saturday night. I mean, that, obviously, I'm sure you've spoken to lots of people about this. Obviously, COVID has been really terrible for a lot of people in very, very, very real ways. But it's also almost destroyed the music world and performers and, you know, theatre and everything, and people have lost their jobs, people have lost careers, they've changed career, they've had to re-educate themselves and do a different job, which is terrible. So we're just so lucky, I think. I don't ever take it lightly that, you know, we get to do what we're doing, and I just think doing a Saturday night in a great big arena like that would just be amazing, so I'm so looking forward to it for sure.
Support your live music and show up for the event. It's going to be great. Rick, it was a pleasure talking to you, and we're looking
also
forward to see you here in Copenhagen. You will be driving.
Thank you.
or go by the plane.
I think I am going to drive, because we've got a few days. We we play the Albert Hall in London,
yeah,
which is really, again, it's going to be a great gig to do.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to jump in the car the day after, come over. We're going to have a dinner or two and a couple of lunches, as I say, you know, with family and stuff. Then we do the gig and then I come back and then we kind of start again a few days later with some gigs in the UK. So, but I think I probably will drive. I'll see how I feel. I might fly it, but I think I'll drive it.
Yeah, maybe some friends have some stuff there they want to deliver.
I was just going to say, if you've got any furniture you need bringing to London, I'm your man, you know.
Yeah, my daughter lives in Brentford. Maybe she needs something. I'll ask her.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, listen, you should have mentioned that at the beginning. Talk to me about Brentford for a second. Come on, man. Does she go to any of the matches?
Her boyfriend is playing in the club.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, no, listen, it's so exciting now. And obviously the Danish connection is just amazing. And it's been a breath of fresh air, really. I think it was, you know, very often you have a club and then you support another club.
Mm.
So many people, I think, are rooting for Brentford because it's, you know, the manager seems great, obviously. I would say that, but he seems pretty great.
Yeah, it's going.
And it's just, it's great.
Yeah.
Oh, well, listen, send them my best because I think the whole country's kind of hoping they're going to do well. So, yeah,
I will.
Great.
I will. Thank you. And thank you for your time. And we'll see you in Copenhagen in October.
Yeah, mange tak. Thank you.
Selv tak, Rick.
Rick Astley på Pop FM.